If you ask me, why do I stand here so unafraid of everything around me? Proudly I would say, I am a Muslim. If you ask her, why does she dress that way, all covered up in a world that gives it all away? Proudly she would say, I am a Muslim.
Islamic laws.
If you ask him, why does he still pray 5 times a day when so many others have strayed? Smiling, he would say, I am a Muslim.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحیم. In the name of God, welcome to another edition of the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio, in which we try to ask and answer some of the questions related to the Islamic laws based on the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei. But before we embark on our episode, let's take a listen to a short biography. A little bit of background about Ayatollah Khamenei. He was born in 1939. When he began his Hawza studies, it took him 5.5 years to finish the Muqaddamat in the Sutuh. The standard time for studying the Muqaddamat in the Sutuh for an Iranian student that is not raised with the Arabic language is about 10 years. At the age of 18, he starts attending Bahthul Kharij. Bahthul Kharij, he starts it in Mashhad under Sayyid Hadi Milani. For 7 years straight, he was in Qom studying under Ayatollah Burujerdi, Imam Khomeini, the son of Ayatollah Ha'ari, who set up the Hawza in Qom, Sheikh Murtaza Ha'ari, which was one of the top figures in Qom. Then he went back to Mashhad. For 4 years, he studied Kharij under Ayatollah Milani again. Speaking to some of those who knew Ayatollah Khamenei in Iran, when the issue of the ijtihad of Ayatollah Khamenei came up, they said, we testify that he was a mujtahid not now, but in 1337, that's in the Iranian calendar, 1337, that's the first year that he started his Bahthul Kharij. He was teaching also. He had classes, he was teaching makasas, some of the advanced classes in the Hawza, he was teaching that. 5 years before the actual movement started by Imam Khomeini, he was a mujtahid according to that testimony. And when the movement of Imam Khomeini began, he was part of it, he was politically active, but he also was involved with his studies, as we said. Up till 1347, he was actively participating in Bahthul Kharij of Ayatollah Milani in Mashhad. And after he became the supreme leader, a little while after that, because he was requested a lot to start Bahthul Kharij, he started Bahthul Kharij and he's teaching. One can very clearly testify that this man is no doubt one of the most just and adil scholars that would not, for any reason, for his children, for his family, for his personal benefit, for any party's benefit, for anything other than Allah, change his view and make a decision to go against what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has said because of something like that.
Back to the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Javed, our guest speaker. Assalamu alaikum, and Sheikh, and welcome to the program.
My pleasure. Thank you very much. Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
The pleasure is all mine. Well, we are talking about some of the jurisprudential laws regarding marriage that we've started, in fact, from two episodes ago onwards. Well, let me ask you at the beginning of this episode regarding the social conditions and the status quo that we face today. Some people, in fact, live in solitude and they don't like to get married, although they have their physical desires, right? Like everybody else. Well, yes. like eating, like drinking, you know, and so on and so forth. And this is, again, one of the, natural things which exist in human beings, as well as the animals, by the way. I'd like to ask you that, is marriage, because there are other ways to satisfy the physical desires and lusts, as you mentioned in the previous episodes, but is marriage obligatory? If not, when does it become obligatory, in fact, to have that marriage?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Marriage is not obligatory in and of itself.
Mm-hmm.
Islam did not impose it on mankind, but it is a physical need. It is a must in the sense that if we are to procreate, if we are to have children, and protect ourselves from falling into sins, we must take action for marriage. Now, if you are safe, if we do not want children, if we do not fall into a sin, then it's not necessary to get married.
Mm-hmm.
But if it is likely, if one fears that if he does not marry, then he is definitely going to fall into a sin, like he will, for example, commit adultery, he will go to brothel houses, he will, let's say, in non-Islamic countries, of course, and then he will go to other places where he will, saturate himself. In that case, it becomes obligatory. So in certain cases, marriage does become obligatory.
Mm-hmm.
It depends from situation to situation.
I see. Sheikh Javid, except far few denominations that don't really advocate marriage, in fact, let me ask you this question. As I said, most religions, if not all, advocate marriage, right?
Sure.
But not all advocate types of or different types of marriage. Well, how many types of marriage do we have? Like, we all know we are already familiar with the permanent marriage in most religions, right?
Yes.
But what
of
about the temporary marriage? Would you elaborate on these two?
Well, just as you rightly mentioned, there are two kinds of marriages. One is temporary marriage, and the other one is permanent marriage. The temporary marriage is better known as mut'a. Well, and the other one is called permanent marriage. Of course, the word nikah is used sometimes. And now, when it comes to the difference is mainly goes back to the time, because temporary marriage in temporary marriage the time is fixed. It could be for one day, for 1 month, and for, let's say, many months, many years.
Mm-hmm.
So the time is fixed. And of course, the span of the temporary marriage should not exceed one's, length of life, one's life span, because otherwise it will turn into kind of permanent marriage.
Mm-hmm.
So the period should be fixed. It should be less than a person's normal life.
Mm-hmm.
And otherwise, the temporary marriage is very much the same as permanent marriage,
mm-hmm.
except that the time is fixed. Now, when it comes to the formula of nikah, the formula of marriage, the formula should be recited. Both parties to the marriage should consent to the marriage,
mm-hmm.
and should be well informed about the conditions,
yes.
about every stipulations that are made.
Right.
And it's not a one-sided contract. It's a contract that has to be agreed upon by
yes.
both parties to the marriage.
It's reciprocal.
Yes, and then there's some minor differences also. When it comes to temporary marriage, there is no divorce because as soon as the time expires, then the marriage becomes null and void. Then the marriage ceases to become valid.
I see.
And then when it comes to permanent marriage, then it cannot be cancelled, and under any circumstances, it cannot be revoked unless there is a divorce that is issued by the husband.
Mm-hmm.
The divorce is in the hands of the husband, who should, with his own consent and without being forced, should carry out the divorce. And there are certain conditions for the divorce. Of course, it should be discussed in a separate session. And then...
Let me stop you there, actually, for a short break. And then we'll be back and continue our program, Islamic Laws, on RIB English Radio. Don't go away.
The followers of Ayatollah Khomeini can refer to leader.ir/en. In the section Religious Affairs, you can ask your question and receive the answer. In the library section, some of Ayatollah Khomeini's works of jurisprudence are available, including Practical Laws of Islam, Frequently Asked Questions, Comparative Fatwa, and Newly Asked Questions.
Allah, ya Allah, guide me all the way to your Jannah, ya Allah, oh Allah, don't let me go astray, 'cause I need.
Back to the program, Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio, with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Javid, our guest speaker. We are talking about some of the jurisprudential laws regarding marriage. Sheikh Javid, you know, we all know that the preparation for marriage, in fact, takes time and energy, and it consumes something, right? It's also, you know, it needs money, for example, right? Some people, especially I'm talking about the young people, you know, are not really that prepared to get married.
Yes.
Right? Because of many reasons. Some of them are, logical reasons. Some of them are not, maybe. All right? We don't... want to talk about that or, go into details about it. But the thing is, they still have this kind of lust or physical desire to satisfy. So my question is whether, they are, permitted to self-gratify themselves or not. I mean, is self-gratification or masturbation allowed in Islam? What do the religious authorities say about this?
Well, not being able to marry or to get married is not a license for self-gratification, which is better known as masturbation. Of course, masturbation is a great sin. It is not permissible under any circumstances. No religious authority, as far as I know, has permitted masturbation, no matter what the excuse. Maybe. So it is a great sin, and of course that's why the religion says, the Islamic Sharia says, that in the event that one might fall into a sin, it is necessary for an individual to take action for marriage. And it makes no difference. The rule is applicable to both man and woman. If a man fears that he might fall into a sin, or if a woman fears that she might fall into a sin, it is necessary that he or she take action for marriage in order to protect himself or herself.
Mm-hmm, I see. Thank you very much, Sheikh Javid, and thank you, my dear listeners, for listening to the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio, in which we try to deal with some of the issues and jurisprudential laws regarding marriage with Sheikh Javid. Until another program, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
لا إله إلا هو لا إله إلا هو، لا إله إلا هو.